One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. Every week we talk about how to love ourselves, others, and a higher nature, how to improve our life and our spirituality, our finances, emotions, and health. We're at the Miami Book Festival. We're having a great time with authors and fans and readers. And we have a very special guest today, Mr. Anthony Stoltz, who, aka Sensei Tony, is a spiritual teacher and author whose articles have been featured in magazines like Mindful, Lion's Roar, The Elephant Journal. He's been helping people find personal freedom and fulfillment for the past 31 years. He's an ordained Buddhist minister, internationally recognized mindfulness expert, and the spiritual director of the Blue Mountain Lotus Society and founder of the Blue Lotus School of Mindfulness Arts. Welcome, Anthony, to the show.
Thank you. Welcome.
Now, I asked you today, we used to do martial arts. I think you did some and I did some back in the day. And I grabbed your hand and you said you wouldn't do any kind of martial arts hold. You would just tap me on the hand. Why is that?
Well, you know, to me, we're talking about martial arts. To me, martial arts ideally are about stopping conflict.
Yes.
So if someone is in my space, I try to disarm them psychologically first.
Okay, so how would you do that? Let's say that you're in the dark alley and some guy that looks rough grabs your arm. How would you disarm him mentally?
Well, things like that have happened to me. And so the first thing I would do is I would probably touch his arm too. And then I would look at him to see what his intent was. That happened. Something like that did happen to me one time.
Okay, so what happened? Did he want to rob you or just wanted to say hello?
No. He was intending on mugging me.
Wow.
And I said, what do you need?
Okay.
And he said, well, I need money. I said, okay. I said, I have a little bit of money, but is there anything more I can offer you? And that threatened to disarm him.
Wow.
And so I reached him and I gave him a little bit of cash that I had on me. And then we went for a walk and talked about his life.
That's an amazing story. I mean, that's very interesting.
True story.
True story. Because you disarmed him, in a sense, with love. Love the energy. You know, you...
I really think the energy you bring to a situation helps shape the way it ends up.
That's very interesting because, like in Aikido, we talk about harmonizing with the opponent's energy.
Right.
So first you join them and then you lead them.
Yeah.
So by asking the question, what else can I do for you, you kind of disarm him and join him.
Yeah.
And then you let him, you know, to a different place.
Right.
Now, you also talk about the three principles of oneness. What does that actually mean?
So the three principles are my reimagining the three basic teachings of the Buddha. And so the first teaching is the idea that everything in life can possibly create suffering for us,
yes,
psychologically. And that the approach to that we take is mindfulness, which for me is a little different. Because I look at mindfulness as mainly how to change the way we're thinking and believing about a situation. That will change the way we're feeling and that will change the way we're acting. So those are the first words of the Buddha, that all we are is made up of our thoughts and how we think. So that's how we focus that. And then we find that the other thing that's sort of, I guess you would say, a bit miraculous about suffering is that suffering seems to create compassion in most people. And so we would look to compassion as a fruit that we could possibly yield from the suffering that we're going into.
Interesting. I mean, that's a little bit like...
That's the first principle.
First principle, okay. Cognitive behavioral psychology talks about, you know, changing thoughts to change feelings, to change actions.
Right.
So we kind of challenge irrational thoughts.
Right.
Now, when you talk about principles, is that the one where it says desire brings suffering and then... you have to transcend suffering? What are the principles in Buddhism?
Well, the first principle, as I said, is around the idea that everything in life can create suffering.
Right, because it's transitory, so it doesn't last.
That's true. And that it's created primarily not by the situation we're experiencing, but the beliefs and thoughts we bring to the situation.
Okay.
And you mentioned cognitive behavioral therapy, like Albert Ellis,
yes,
and Aaron Beck.
Right.
And those ideas were taking off on a lot of the concepts that you find originally in Buddhism.
Very interesting. And what is the second principle?
The second principle is about change, that how can we use change as an opportunity to create something new?
Yes.
So again, the three principles are sort of metaphors that we can yield from the way the universe actually works. And if we can get in harmony with the way the universe works, that can bring harmony to our life. So the second principle is that change will happen for everyone.
Yes.
And that when we look at the universe or we look at nature, change is always the way something new comes into being. And sometimes it seems that nothing new can come into being unless there's change.
So is your idea to embrace the change? Like, let's say you're getting older, you lose your hair, you get saggier, you know, you're whatever it is, right? You lose money, sure. You lose a relationship. Should we just say, hey, you know, that's the way I am? Or is there a different way to look at it?
I think the way to look at it is to ask yourself if the way you're thinking right now or the thoughts or beliefs you have right now are helping you or if they're hurting you. If they're hurting you, then it might be good to examine them to see if you could find thoughts that might be more clear or based on reality that might be more useful to you than the ones that you have.
Interesting. The other thing I always wondered about Buddhism is that they say that desire creates attachment, which creates suffering. But then the idea if you become not attached, you know, you don't have as much feeling toward people and things like that, and maybe as much passion. How do you deal with that part of it?
I think the reading that a lot of people have on that sounds like a bad kung fu movie. You know? And I don't think that was, in my experience or understanding, that wasn't the Buddha's intent. The intent of the teaching is not that we should not have desires or not have things we have in our life, but not have an unrealistic view of those things.
Ah, okay, unrealistic view.
And what those things can actually provide us.
That's a good point. So it's not that it's going to make you happy to have more money, but money can be useful in certain things.
Yes, yeah. Well, someone asked that at the book talk.
Right.
And I said, the Buddha was, we would never say that there's anything wrong with money or the pursuit of wealth.
Yes.
It's just that, what do you think that's going to bring you? And if you think ultimately that will bring you inner happiness, then we would disagree with that. But you could use that wealth to do wonderful creative things.
So it's the kind of the cognition or thought attached to the object that
that's
creates
right.
the suffering. Or
and
the,
that's the heart of Buddhist mindfulness.
Exactly. And the Hindu philosophy, they have different paths, but they don't really judge it. They say you have the path of pleasure, the path of duty, the path of service, and then the path of agape, which is unconditional love, or bhakti.
The different yogas,
Yeah, I think you might call it karuna, perhaps, or your compassion. In Buddhism philosophy?
Well, Buddhism would combine both wisdom and compassion.
What does karuna mean?
Well, karuna is a Sanskrit word that refers to compassion.
So it is compassion, okay.
Yeah, and compassion is understood not, at least in Buddhism, not so much as a feeling, but as an action based on realizing that someone else's suffering is not unlike my own. They don't want to suffer, and neither do I.
Right.
So that's the motivation.
So it's an
perhaps.
Empathetic understanding, like putting yourself in that person's
shoe. That's right. That's right.
Now, the term mindfulness has a lot of popularity these days. Even in therapy, you know, there's called mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
But if you can make it a simple understanding of it, what does it mean? Is it just doing yoga and meditating? Is it, you know, breathing?
Mindfulness?
Yes, the term mindfulness.
Well, as I said, the definition of mindfulness comes from the very first words ascribed to the Buddha, which is everything that we are arises with our thoughts. Everything that we do arises with our thoughts. So the mindfulness is beginning to understand that our thoughts, number one, are not who we are, and number two, that we can change those thoughts so that we're more in harmony with things as they are, and that will bring about a greater sense of peace.
Because you're looking at what I wrote down, greater awareness and peace of mind.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what it works?
Absolutely, yeah.
So being aware of your thoughts as they come in.
Right. So the practical way we practice mindfulness is when I get hooked by something,
yes.
I take time to unpack that and find out what it was that was at the source of it.
Yes.
And then what action I can take to change that. And it's based on the ancient teaching called the Satipatthana in Buddhism, where we take, all right, here was, when you look at cognitive therapy, Albert Ellis admitted later in life that he had taken a lot of that from it, but he didn't want to call it that because of the hippie movement and all the stuff going on in the 60s.
Right.
It wouldn't have sounded very scientific. And it's certainly not only the Buddhists. The Buddhists aren't the only ones to ever say that.
Yes.
Pyrrho in Greece, and certainly Seneca and Marcus Aurelius. There are plenty of people, even in the Bible, as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is. So it's kind of an old universal idea, but Buddhism has a very specific technique to help you to realize that.
Interesting. It sounds like you're very well read in psychology and philosophy.
I love to learn.
You had a background in educationally? What have you studied in the past?
I have a master's degree in pastoral theology, systematic theology, and a doctorate in education.
Wow.
Around the
pretty
teaching
educated guy. So Anthony, in a practical sense, if you get mad, I mean, do you get mad?
Of course.
Okay, let's say you're on the freeway and someone flips you off or whatever, cuts you
sure,
off.
Sure, sure.
Now, at that moment, you kind of become aware of your anger and see yourself like a fiery burning sensation, but you don't react to it, or do you have a different approach?
Well, I think it begins with the foundation in my daily practice so that I'm not relying on just my response at that given moment.
Right.
That I'm creating a foundation that changes my mind and my brain and the way I'm reacting to things. And then in that moment, I can apply different practices. One of the practices we have is called the four steps of mindfulness. And basically what I do is I recognize I've been hooked, right?
Right.
I acknowledge that, because if I don't do that, then I'm kind of pretending or stuffing it.
Okay.
And then the next step is to recognize that I don't have to act out of this.
Okay.
And the third step then is to do something that will kind of bring me out of that space. So I might watch my breath, I might sing a song, I might just take a moment to breathe. Whatever it is that gives me that moment to step away.
Someone cuts you off the freeway, they flip you off.
Yeah.
So at that moment, you're gonna take a deep breath?
That moment, I recognize, first of all, that
angry.
Some idiot almost got in my way, and aren't they the worst thing in the world, and I'm right. I'm a better driver and all that. I have to acknowledge all that.
Okay, so it's coming in your head, right?
Accept all that.
Right.
And then I can breathe and then decide that I don't have to live out of that reaction.
Okay, and then you might even say a kind word, like have a nice day or no?
Nah, I don't have to even do that. All I have to do is just look at my reactivity and then draw back. And if I do that, it'll begin to dissipate. And when I recognize that it's dissipating, I reaffirm I know how to handle it.
Right, but could it be also compassionate? Maybe they're having a bad day, you know, their wife is sick, you know, like
that can come.
Empathy, right, you know.
That can come, but if I try too soon to do that.
You're still in the anger mode.
Then I'm being a goody two-shoes and I don't really buy into it and it's false.
Right, but could you be at a higher level of elevation? Have you heard of David Hawkins? He did the levels of consciousness. You know, basically he had different like numerical measures. Like, for example, fear is 100. Apathy is 50, and then, you know, 1,000 is self-actualization, like love, for example. Like, if you're at a very high level of self-actualization, do those feelings even come to your mind? Like, do you know any Buddhists that are that level?
Yes, like, I think they would.
What happens to them? It doesn't even come to them.
I personally don't think that the practice is about getting to a state where I'm never going to react to anything. It's more important how I react when it happens.
Right, but you think there are some people, elevated masters, that do have that ability, as far as you know?
I don't know.
The Dalai Lama get pissed off on the road?
I imagine he could.
Okay. So we're all human, you're saying, right?
We're all human. Yeah.
So we react to things.
The Buddhist teaching was never about, for me, achieving a state as much as it was a process of practice.
Okay, so all your life you will be improving, hopefully, a little bit.
All my life I'm learning, I hope, to ground myself in practices that will make me less reactive.
Yes.
And then when I do react, know how to work with them more skillfully.
That makes sense. And then, of course, death is everyone's fear. What is your philosophy on death? Because I think Buddhism talks about oneness, right? Uniting with the oneness. Is that the idea? A reincarnation, I think, too, right?
Well, some Buddhists believe in reincarnation.
Well, it's not a good thing, though. It means like you're not really at the highest level. You still have to work through some things, right?
Well, I don't personally necessarily subscribe to any particular belief system about life after death.
Yes.
I think there's enough evidence. There's enough science, like folks like Sir Roger Penrose, Freeman Dyson, pretty brilliant people who, through their experimentation and theories in quantum physics, They believe that consciousness is something more. I believe that our story continues, but for me, the idea of nirvana is one that doesn't necessarily tell me what the story will be, but just that the story goes on much bigger than I could imagine.
And I would like our podcast to continue next time, because you've been a wonderful guest. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we get a hold of your books and website and all the information?
The best way to go is the website is AskSenseiTony.com. Everything else is on there.
Do you do workshops? Do you
We do retreats, workshops.
Corporate things?
I work with people one-on-one.
Okay.
We also have a seminary program for people that want to train to be teachers.
That's wonderful.
So that's the best way.
Well, we'd love to have you back on. Maybe collaborate in L.A. if you ever get out
there. Yeah, I'm in L.A. a lot,
actually.
It's been
a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll say arigato gozaimasu. So, Love University students, if you have any questions, you can email us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com. 310-226-8090. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Like us on Facebook at Love University Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @LoveUPodcast. Until next time, Love University students, put away your notepads, your books, your iPads. And this is Dr. Alex Avila.